stop the signal.
So anyway, we've got Texas Joe and Pat here. They're going to talk about homesteading. We're probably going to get into some lock picking. We might get into some other stuff. We had a pretty big day-to-day news-wise, although this episode...
Oh, God.
...in any manner. Maybe we'll push that towards the end, because that's still on if we still have the internet by the time I'm dropping this episode. Pat and Texas Joe, I think you guys are... Now, you guys are both hosting this event that we're going to be talking about today, right?
I'm helping. I'm a presenter, but it's Texas Joe's show, top to bottom.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't so I've read up a little bit on it on your site, Pat. But Texas Joe, do you want to give a rundown? Now, this is gonna be a class that's offered in Texas, in or outside of Houston, I believe, April 10th and 11th, Saturday, Sunday. Is that right?
So
9, 10, 11.
Yeah, 9th, 10th, and 11th.
Okay, sweet. Do you want to give a quick quick or as long as you want overview of what this is, and then maybe we can parse through some of the details?
Sure. So it's going to be definitely a 2-day, but like I said, we're going to have that third, you know, half day or whatever for people to arrive and get set up. I'm sure people are probably going to be trying to arrive Thursday night or Friday morning, so we're not going hard and fast with the Friday morning Friday morning thing. So it's going to be, like you said, just north of Houston. It's going to be here on my 10-acre homestead, although people get all picky with their titles and everything and tell me that I'm too big to be a homestead.
How dare you?
Hold on. I can't let that go. I can't let that one go. What exactly is, because I don't know if I've heard this little bit of nitpickery, what exactly constitutes a homestead? Is it between a homestead and a ranch, or a homestead and a farm or something?
So... I guess by everybody's definition, I'm a farm, but when we bought this, it was raw land and it had fencing on one side, and it's now a fully functioning farm that's tax exempt in the state of Texas. And we have, man, I guess I'll run down the list. We have ducks, chickens, turkeys, goats, horses. Let's see. I have beehives. Man, I know there's something I'm leaving out. Two dogs.
Gardening, aquaponics.
Yeah, gardening, aquaponics. I'm also a firearm instructor. I teach some classes out at the house, though I like to take them to a a proper range near the house. But fully functional farm. It's just the scale that I do it on is, I guess, the little romantic people that like the word homesteading. They like it on a smaller scale, but you know we don't do anything small scale, so. It is what it is.
So what would you say that people that like the term homestead or prefer the term homestead, where do they cut that off? At like 2-3 acres?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. That's interesting. So continue with the class.
Okay. So we're going to we're going to have it here. We're going to go hands-on with all of the animals that we have here. Except bees are kind of a strange thing for people. Some people don't want to get up close and personal with bees. They're like, hey, we'll watch you put on a suit and do that. So we're going to go into animal care for each type of animal. We're going to go into the feeding systems for each type of animal, because one of the things that we do, oh, I forgot, we also have rabbits. So,
that's cool.
Yeah, they're tasty too.
So
we're going to go into, like I said, the housing arrangements for each animal and why we did what we did. We're going to go through the, you know, automated feeding and watering systems, why we chose what we chose. On some housing designs, we're in our second or third iteration. So we're going to talk about the other stuff that we did and how we arrived to where we are now. We're going to, you know, talk about, you know, for horses and goats, we're going to talk about hoof care. We're going to talk about, you know, grooming them and stuff like that. Then we're going to talk about the day-to-day operations of, you know, having a farm or having a homestead that people don't like to think about. You know, people just get, you know, kind of captivated by the sexiness and the, you know, the romantic part of this. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, here's the thing. You can wake up at 3:00 in the morning and have animals out or have an animal dying, and it's a soul-crushing day for you. And that's when a lot of people are like, to hell with it. I throw my hands up. I'm out. You know, but it's getting through that. We are going to talk about it. My wife is not a presence on the show at all. It's going to be a lot of people's first time getting to meet her and even getting to interact with her. So she's going to talk about, you know, the practicalities, the operations, the day-to-day. That's actually, we're going to present that together. We're going to have Pat out talking about security. We're going to have Fortress K9 out. They're going to be debuting, or they're going to be showing off some of their personal protection dogs. And I'm actually, yours truly is going to be in a bite suit getting attacked by a dog.
Oh, hell yeah.
Let's see. We're going to have, man, we've got a pit that's so big we have to pull it behind a full-size truck. We're going to be doing tons of brisket, tons of barbecue. All of the food and drinks are included in the ticket price. We're going to have fire pit and fellowship. Both nights, or every night that people are there, we're going to have a freedom and farmsteading, like fireside swap meet kind of thing going on, which is going to be like a big barter, I guess a big barter, like session around the fire pit. We're going to have, a guy talk about brewing alcohol and possibly have some cool stuff set up with regards to that. To make fuel, absolutely. None of it's going to accidentally fall into our mouths.
Can't imagine that would happen.
Not yeah.
In Texas. Yeah.
No, definitely not. And I mean, past that, man, it's just, I've been talking about doing something like this for probably 3 years. And I finally just said, you know, I'm going to pull the plug on this. I finally talked my wife into, you know, allowing this to happen. I want the property as a homesteader. Like, one of the goals is to have the property pay its own mortgage or some of its own mortgage. And we're going to, you know, we're going to get that done. So
I got cool. A couple things I'd like to jump in that are pretty important. Since we're pretty early on, Texas Joe, do you want to give the, maybe we bookend this episode with how they contact you and sign up? Cause I think that that's one of the goals here, is to bring some really cool people from the Liberty movement out to your farmstead. So, what is your email address that they should email you at to sign up?
All right. So my ridiculously long, unnecessarily complicated email address is chicken.guy@thewifiproject.org.
And we'll say that again at the end. And just if you're interested in coming, just shoot Texas Joe an email at that address and figure out your payment processing. That's it. Super easy.
Yep.
Yep. And I will be posting all of that info up in the episode, so people can just find it in the links as well.
The other thing I had was the food and the drinks will be included, and that means alcohol as well, correct?
Oh, yes. I forgot to cover that. The event is being sponsored by Lone Pint Brewery in Magnolia, Texas.
Awesome. That is a really cool sponsor. That is not boring at all.
So the people that are coming, you're encouraged to, bring your own bottle, bring your own coffee, bring your own smoke, whatever. I'm sure that there's going to be some sampling going on between the attendees and stuff like that. I'm just telling everybody, I'm good with smoke, but hardcore drugs, you can keep that shit at home.
That sounds reasonable.
That seems reasonable. Yeah, for sure.
So,
I guess let me back up a little bit.
So nobody from Timeline Earth can come with us.
Yeah, no, to the event. Yeah, we'll be. Yeah, if you the hard drugs, you come to Timeline Earth Studios, and if you want to go learn how to be productive with your life, go hang out with these guys. but on that, do you want to give an overview? Like, you know, obviously, I would guess that probably a lot of the people that are going to come to this, or maybe I'm wrong, but a lot of people that are going to come to this may not be in a position where they have 10 acres of land in kind of unincorporated Texas. Is this something where your intent, your goal is to build, maybe one or two skill sets, like come away with one or two skill sets that you can apply, even if you don't have that big homestead, something that you can apply into your own home as it is right now, even if you have a, you know, let's just say hypothetically an eighth of an acre in North Texas?
Yes, absolutely. That is definitely, you know, what we're doing here, the only reason we do all the stuff that we do is because we have the room. So this is a chance for somebody to get in and say, hey, you know what? I've always thought about, you know, raising rabbits, and I've looked at all of these different options and stuff like that. This gives you a couple days to, you know, get immersed in it, ask your questions, handle the rabbits, you know, do all that stuff and say, hey, I think I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger on this. Then at that point, you know, we can arrange for, you know, me to breed some babies and, you know, like hypothetically, if you're in North Texas, breed some babies, meet you somewhere, drop the babies off while you have the time, you can be setting up your, you know, your rabbit pen, your, you know, your housing assist, your system, your food and water system, stuff like that. And then, hey, pull the trigger on it and do it on a scale that you're comfortable with. So you get to play with all my stuff and everything that we have going on and figure out if it's something you want to do.
What's really important too, I want to add, I think you guys like kind of hinted at it a little bit, but the point of this is you come here, you attend the course, and you leave with a ton of different topic ideas that you can make a huge return on investment with. So yes, the purpose isn't like a water park. Like you come, you have a good time, you go home. The purpose is you come here, A, you're networking with super cool people in this liberty movement. And B, every single one of these blocks, you can pick one of them and take them home and expand it and start making real self-sufficiency, real production, productive systems, and some money in return too. So that's I think, either the first or the second most important thing about attending this event.
Yeah, so to piggyback on that, Insurgency Knitting Circle exists because of an event like this. Three of the hosts met in an event like this.
That's the podcast that Texas Joe is a host of. And I
oh, sure. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't even...
We didn't do that. We didn't handle that yet.
So Insurgency Knitting Circle is my show. Or okay, our show.
Very cool. I think I'm in that Discord, and I know I've listened before, but it's been a little while. But no, I've seen a lot of cool stuff floating around in that in that circle. So that's great. I've got a couple. Let me ask some personal questions for the hypothetical 8th acre plot in North Texas.
Go ahead.
Because I feel like that's yes, probably a situation that not a small number of listeners are probably in where. You know, we don't have 10 acres of land, but we have, you know, I certainly have land that I could be using. And one of the things that I've been looking at, well, let me first ask this. If you have a little bit of land, I've got a fenced in backyard. I've got an open front yard. You know, it's probably, I don't know, 80 feet by 20 feet in the back and probably the same in the front. What would be some of your immediate recommendations of things that you could be doing with that land that are productive with, you know, somewhat limited space? I mean, what would be some of the things that, you know, obviously I'm not going to raise cattle back there.
No, that's not enough room.
But right. So what would be maybe some of the things that you might suggest to people on with a little bit more limited space?
Okay. So I'm picturing the backyard of a house in like a neighborhood. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. We can deal with that. So what I would do, you said 80 by 20.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, so I'd get into gardening, I'd get into aquaponics, and then I'd definitely do rabbits or something, you know, quail or something like that, or even, you know, like a small breed chicken. Rabbits, okay. Rabbits would probably be my go-to. They do well in an intensively managed space. So we have somewhere between 20 and 30 right now. In probably like a 5 by 15 space, because we have it. I'll have to send you guys pictures of it, but we just redesigned it. So we have our rabbits in like a racking system. So, and then if you're doing the aquaponics, you can be farming fish at the same time, growing your vegetables in the top of the beds, in the vegetable grow beds. And then if you're, you know, doing your gardening, anything that comes out of the garden as a byproduct that you don't consume, your rabbits will consume.
Okay, cool.
So you got an ecosystem.
When you're raising rabbits, are you raising them strictly for the rabbit meat?
Oh, no. I like money too.
Okay. So to sell as pets or to sell as other people raising them for meat?
Once you buy it, I don't care.
I was just wondering, like, primarily.
So I put rabbits for sale on Craigslist here in Houston and sell them for 20 to 25 a piece all day long.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Huh. Is that something you do, though? Do you eat some of the rabbits that you have on your homestead?
Do I eat them?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, they're very tasty.
Oh, yeah. I've had rabbit. It's good.
So I have an old recipe that was passed down from my dad to me, and I'm sure he got it from, I think, his mother. It's called Hassan Pfeffer rabbit. It's made with a fried rabbit, like soaked in a red wine saute, and it just turns to gravy. So you fry all the rabbit, like you would normally, like most people would stop there just by, you know, frying the rabbit or whatever. But once it's fried, you put it in this, you know, onions and chicken broth and red wine and stuff like that. And you let it sit there and it just sits there, cooks for about an hour, hour and a half, and everything just turns to sticky deliciousness and kind of like a gravy style. And by the time you get done with that, it's very tender, real easy to eat. And it's like chicken wishes it could be.
Oh, that's exciting and sexy.
Yeah.
You just you can scrape it, literally scrape it off the bone like you would get chicken off of, you know, like the bone, like fried chicken.
Yeah.
You just put it over rice and then drench the whole thing in the gravy that comes out of the pan. Son, it is so good.
What are some of the things that might go into maintenance for the rabbits? I mean, what do they require with respect to time and energy?
So for us, it's surprisingly low. With our new system, we have a rack, and then we have like sheeting, like plastic sheeting that would normally go on like the roof of a greenhouse or something like that. We have that under the cages, and it's set at an angle, so when they poop and pee out of the bottom of the cage, it rolls down into like a house gutter system. Mm-hmm. Rolls down the gutter into a bucket. All we really do is go through every day with a water hose and just kind of encourage anything that's still stuck to the plastic sheeting, encourage that down into the gutter system, the drainage system with a water hose. Mm-hmm. Take all that byproduct, go throw it on our garden beds, dilute it. Definitely, for those of you listening who want to try this, you definitely need to dilute that. So we dilute that, throw it on our garden beds. Top off the feeders. They have little basket feeders inside their cages. Are you guys familiar with the standard Yeti cup that's about 10, 12 inches tall?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So a couple of Yeti cups of food, or, you know, a Yeti sized cup of food in their feeders every day. Top off their water. There's a, I guess, like a 32 ounce water bottle that hangs on the outside of the cage and has a little spout that goes in. We go down, we top off. And top off water, top off feed, and what, 10 cages, rinse the stuff down the drain and go.
Wow. Do you let them out outside of the cage to run around, or do they need that, or do they want that, or what is
so I don't let mine out. While we are an established operational farm, one thing that I always tell people that to keep in mind, you know, when you're raising turkeys and you're raising ducks and you're raising chickens and raising rabbits, you're raising food. Okay. Mm-hmm. They smell like food. They act like food. They make food noises. So, you know, the free range, cage free is, you know, fantastic, but for us, we won't have that animal very long if we let it out. So, we don't really, you know, we take really good care of our animals, especially our rabbits. They do live in a cage system. That's the way they live, but it's not like a CAFO kind of deal where they're like nose to butt and, you know, having to have steroids and antibiotics. Nothing on my farm gets antibiotics. Nothing gets steroids. Nothing gets growth hormones. And all my animals, I mean, Pat will tell you, all my animals are beautiful and in perfect health. If it doesn't, and adversely, you know, if it's something that we can't fix, we just let nature run its course. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Speaking of smaller plots, so this is another personal question for me. I've got this area in the backyard. I live in a community that actually does have a lot of animals. Like, a lot of people have chickens around here. It's kind of a little bit of a poorer community. And with that comes a large amount of semi-stray feral cats.
I don't know if you should be eating those, Carr.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll stop someday, but I have way too many to stop eating them. Let me tell you that. I got to get rid of them somehow. So I've got my backyard, right? And I want chickens, or I want something that lays eggs, because I like eggs a lot. And, but I have been struggling. So at first I wanted ducks, but ducks are basically useless against predators. And then I was thinking chickens, but same there again, except if you get a rooster, and a lot of my neighbors have roosters, but I don't really want one yelling at me in the morning. well, not even me so much, but my neighbors. I don't want them to get pissed off. I'm a morning guy anyway, so it doesn't matter to me. But and then I was thinking about geese because they can kind of defend themselves. But I don't know. Do you have any input on that?
So with ducks and geese, the thing that I will tell you, when you're brooding them as babies, a lot of times, you know, we like to brood stuff like indoors just so we can keep an eye on it, see it every day. Oh, you're so cute. Look at you. You know, mm-hmm. Ducks are messy little shites.
I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the problem is that they like to play in their water. They like to poop on the ground in whatever container you have them in. Cause we've tried brooding them in a pool. We've tried, you know, brooding them in a cage. We've tried brooding them and we finally just went to water troughs because they're so messy, but they play in their water. They poop on the ground and their little duck feet smash it flat and make it, you know, it's like duck poop concrete in the bottom of the horse trough by the time we get done. And then we cannot keep them away from predators once they go to the pond. And yeah. Ducks are kind of dumb. So they yeah. like to preen in the shallow edge of the pond. And then a predator's like, hey, surprise, now you're my dinner. And I'm like, yeah. well, I just spent 4 months raising that animal and now you're going to eat it. So
yeah.
If you have a feral cat population, I guess remember the key. When you have a man problem, no man, no problem. And same thing with cats. No cat, no problem. But mm-hmm. that can cross lines for people, especially in a neighborhood. I would say that if you have your hen, or you have your hens and or quail or whatever you decide to do, because quail are pretty quiet. They're pretty small. They come to harvest pretty soon, so that may be a better option for you. Whatever you have, you should probably have some sort of hardened shelter for it, like a, you know, a tractor or like a little chicken coop from like Tractor Supply or something like that, that you put together. Just make sure that you harden it on the outside with some predator resistant wire, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Any little, you know, weak flaws that you see in the design, go ahead. Cause I always, when I look at something like that, or I look at a project, I account for like a 15 to 20% overage in the budget. That way, if I see a flaw in the design or I see a weak spot, I can go ahead and harden that right then while I'm building it and not have to, you know, worry about coming back and getting into these weird shapes, trying to reach a certain area and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, stop. This is crap. Let's fix this now. All right, let's go forward.
So the quail thing is, yeah, part of it. So I guess I have two problems here. One is noise. And like I said, mm-hmm. mostly that's probably for my neighbors. And then, the second one is the cats. But that being said, you know, I could always, I can keep them in a coop or keep an eye on them when they're out running around. Is, what kind of yield would I be looking at for a typical quail?
So I'm not into quail right now, but I have a few okay. friends that are, they come to harvest really quick. You're looking at a couple of months, probably less than that, for a quail to hatch and come to like harvest weight. So they're a smaller animal anyway. Their eggs are smaller. The reason I'm recommending them to you is because they are reasonably quiet. I have chickens. I despise roosters because they want to tell the world how important they are every single day.
Oh yes.
My hens, I can tell because I've got a couple of hens out there that want to tell the world when they're having an egg. Mm-hmm. So they're not as loud as the rooster, but they're out there, you know, making hen noises for 5 minutes before they lay an egg. And then they're like, you know, 5 minutes afterwards, they're telling the entire chicken coop they laid an egg, you know, right. And I can hear them from my backyard or from my back door, you know? So, it's not that if you don't have a rooster, chickens are noiseless, cause they're not, rabbits are pretty quiet until, you know, like, they fight one another or bite one another. We grabbed a mama the other day to move her from one cage to the other, and she screamed like she was dying. They sound like babies crying. So if you're looking for absolute noiselessness, have an empty backyard or grow vegetables.
Yeah, sure.
Vegetables don't make a lot of noise.
Vegetables are fairly quiet.
Yeah. But you know, if you have like, if you went down to like Home Depot or Lowe's or something, and you bought one of those little erector set sheds and then uh-huh. you built an animal system inside there, you should be able to contain most of your noise. You just need to worry about keeping it warm, keeping it cool, keeping it ventilated, stuff like that.
Okay. Okay, cool. How many quail would you recommend? Because I from what I read, you should have like two or three or four ducks. Like if you were going to do ducks, for example, like how many quail do they need to socialize to not be to get not stressed out?
If you were going to do like a typical 8x8 or 10x10 shed and then build something out inside that, you could be running probably 20 to 50 in there.
Oh, wow.
And that would keep you guys fed. You could sell those. You could sell the eggs, stuff like that. Like that could become a very large part of your, you know, your family's food budget. Just out of that one little shed. For me, I would probably run something like a couple of racks of rabbits and then a couple of racks of quails so that they can pick through the rabbit poop and, you know, do their thing and then give them feeders and stuff like that. I like my systems to interact.
Sure.
So, like a 10x10 shed, I'd do half in rabbits, half in quail, and, you know, be smiling at the dopes when they're standing in line for milk sandwich components when a storm comes in.
That's true. That's a
I mean, you'd eventually so you'd eventually get tired of eating quail and quail eggs and rabbits and stuff like that. But, you know, hey, you could say, hey, trade me for a couple of pounds of ground beef. Here's a rabbit.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
for sure.
Or trade your rabbits for money and go buy whatever the hell you want.
That's right.
So,
yeah, I mean, that has always struck me as a small bird, like egg laying creatures have struck me as a great homestead, like small, you know, residential area, option for protein.
Yep. Because everything in that egg, everything you need to grow another chicken or another quail or another duck is in that egg.
Yeah.
So, right.
Well, that's a good idea. I had quail hadn't even crossed my mind. So that's I'll have to throw that on the list to investigate. That's incredible. I don't know, Pat, what do you got any thoughts on this?
Yeah. I want to give people kind of an overview of what the whole event would be like. So you show up maybe Thursday night or maybe really early Friday and we're doing car camping.
Yeah.
Wow. What a cool car. Doing car camping on site or hotels off site if you want.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you show up either late Thursday night or Friday morning. We're getting some. I think we're locked in with a local coffee guy. What's the name of that coffee house, Texas Joe?
Hebrews.
Hebrews Coffee. Yep. I love it. Oh, cool name.
Okay.
Cool. So I think Jeff has a coffee trailer, so he's going to be pulling up and handling all the coffee for us.
And then it's going to be maybe four or five instruction blocks from the morning into the early afternoon. And I think the rest of the night is going to be mingling and fireside chats and bartering and maybe doing some redoubles on some info that you were interested in or sharing other info that we didn't get a chance to formalize into a block of instruction. And it's going to be lots of note taking, lots of phone number taking, and just a really cool campout session also with some lesson blocks that you're going to have a huge return on investment for. So it's at a really cool property. No one's going to bother us. Plenty of room to camp safely. It's going to be enjoyable. I'll be there. Joel from Fortress Canine is going to be there. And I think today, I was at his site today. He said he might have a litter on ground and he might bring three or four brand new pups with him that might be for sale at a discount.
We will be having some members of our community meet their dogs for the first time at the event.
Oh, cool.
Yes, we had someone that bought a dog from Joel. Yeah.
So, and it's going to be, you know, really cool stuff, man. We're one of the episodes that I did last year was labor-saving devices around the homestead. So I talked about all the different, you know, tools I use. Like I've got this pneumatic fence post stapler and everybody's like, what? So we're going to have, you know, a bunch of welding machines set up. We're going to have a bunch of homestead tools set up. We're going to let people demo these and play with them, you know, because some of them are a pretty significant investment. Just my fence post stapler alone is like $300-$400. And a lot of people are like, ooh, I don't know. You know, I don't want to pull the trigger on that till I've played with one. As soon as they hit the first lick on that nail, they're going to want to buy one.
And the other way,
is that for hammering the rails into the posts?
Do what happened?
Is that for knocking the rails into the posts that you're to?
So this fence post stapler shoots a 2-inch U-nail, what you would normally use for like barbed wire fencing or something like that. We hang 50-inch cattle panels on 4x4 treated posts for most of our fencing. So there's what, 16, 17 U-nails that you need to hammer in the post from top to bottom. With this thing, you just load a ring of nails in it and you just go down the thing. It's cool. It is a badass piece of equipment. But like I said, you know, at $300 to $400, people are hesitant to invest in it.
Plus the air compressor, right?
Oh yeah, and you gotta have an air compressor to run it. Yeah. See, well, my setup is, you know, I have a Polaris Ranger side by side. I have a 8.5K generator, gas Jenny sitting in the back of the bed. Next to it, I have my air compressor, and then I have 400 feet of hoses, 300 feet of extension cords. You know, all my, you know, I got a big old 3.5-inch framing nailer for when we're doing, you know, roughing in projects, construction projects. I got my air staplers, my brad nailer, you know, all my nail guns, and then, you know, my fence post stuff. So we're going to have, you know, equipment out here for people to try and test. I run a gas auger, and, you know, people get to play with that. I said we're going to have some welding machines set up. We have a guy coming to talk about welding and fabrication. So we're going to have some material that people can play with, and you know, just kind of dip their toes into, you know, using different types of welders and stuff like that. And it's going to be a good time. We're going to have a great time. And even if we get here and it rains its ass off and we've got to do all the classes in the garage, and
it's going to be great.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's going to be awesome.
Dude, it sounds amazing. It sounds like you can go to this and get not just a little bit of exposure, but quite a bit of exposure and more to come away with to digest later in just a wide variety of homestead type applications.
It's not just going to be homesteading stuff, man. We're going to have most of the people that are coming were in full-time careers before they started doing what they're doing.
Okay.
So these are entrepreneurs talking about taking a side hustle to a full-time hustle and feeding their family and building a life and a livelihood off of, you know, what they do with their brain, their backs, their bare hands, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Do you guys have any, you said this is your first year, so I imagine you have a few visions of what it is this year and what you want it to become. Do you have any kind of, like ceremonial stuff that you're thinking about doing, like kicking it off this year and trying to do one ceremonial event every year has anything like that crossed your mind?
Yes. So I have a couple of things. We kind of got the barter blanket idea from Jack at the Survival Podcast. That's one big thing that he does at his shows all the time. So we want that. But a big part of my life and a point of relaxation and reflection for me is, you know, shiners around the fire pit, especially when it gets cold outside. So I want to share that because that's where I put on, you know, my good music. I get my good beer, get my good whiskey, and I just sit and chill. I want to share that with my listeners and anybody who attends this event. I'm definitely looking forward to Saturday night when we do the blowout barbecue. We're doing 100 pounds of brisket, almost 100 pounds of pork shoulder. Jesus. Like, we're doing beer can chicken, sausage, all that stuff. And then what's left over in the morning is going into breakfast tacos. But on the blowout lunch or the blowout dinner, we're going to talk about what everybody's favorite thing was. We may do that at breakfast Sunday, because by Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, everybody should be taken off. So I'm looking forward to everybody saying what their best part was. I don't know. I have some things that I want to see if we do this first, you know, inaugural thing, if they stick around, end up being a permanent part. I've been wanting to do this for so long that this is equal parts learning event for me to prove this model and prove this theory. And it's a celebration of, you know, because for the first, up until the first of the year, this was only open to our IKC insiders and our loyal, you know, listeners and people that support the show. Now that those people have RSVP'd with me and paid for their seats, I'm opening it up to the rest of everybody. So half the seats are already booked. We're only doing 20 student seats. So there's going to be a small enough amount of people here that you're going to be able to interact with every instructor if you want to talk to, you know, me and Pat in a very intimate setting. So like I said, part of it for me is I want to prove this business model and get this, you know, your, you know, annual income in the door. Yeah. The other part is a celebration and a time to get to know and spend time and hang out with my listeners.
Yeah.
So there, cause there's, man, there's a couple of guys who have been around this, online community. Cause that's one thing we didn't cover earlier. We have a huge online community and support network, on Discord and stuff like that. And then members exchange information and numbers and talk offline and hang out and stuff like that. There's some guys that I cannot wait to have whiskey around the fire pit with, or have coffee, you know, and contemplate greater things with, you know. So I'm really excited, man.
Yeah, man. Me and my buddy Jacob, he runs Tasting Anarchy, like a wine podcast. We do this thing called Childerberg, where we get a bunch of people together camping down near Austin every year. We've done it for 2 years now, and that's been just amazing. We get to hang out with a bunch of like listeners of our show and listeners to Jacob's show, and just a bunch of people in the online in group. And it's super, super satisfying. And everybody has like so much information to bring. And, you know, we do that sitting around the fire and chatting is always just a lot of fun, you know, at night. I'm glad you brought that up
because I was supposed to go to Chili Dose. I was talking to Jake when y'all first announced Chili Dose.
Oh, okay.
And I was supposed to come and do the Texas LTC for you guys.
Yeah,
so that was me. Things ended up not working out. So I was supposed to come and do the Texas License to Carry course at Chili Dose for you guys, but dude, it ended up not going through. I'm still down.
Word. Yeah, dude, we'll have to do that for the third one. I mean, we're doing it in the same place. Hopefully the coronavirus doesn't totally botch everything again.
I had to bring that up.
Kind of what happened last time, but that would be so amazing.
Yep. Dude, I'd be totally down as long as it doesn't interfere with anything and we have somewhere to go and shoot to qualify. It shouldn't be a problem. I'd love to do it.
Yeah,
I love infecting other people with freedom through firearms. It's good
for
stuff.
Sure. For sure. Yeah. No, I think we could probably. I mean, it's out. We did it. Chili Dose, and I don't remember. I don't know how much you followed, but we actually moved it out of Travis County, which obviously was necessary because they were freaking out about the whole thing. But to the county to the west, I think Llano County or something like that. So it's pretty remote. I'm sure we could probably find some place or contact somebody to go shoot around there. Maybe Jacob's already scoped something out, but that'd be a blast. I'm really looking forward to Chili Dose. In fact, Chili 3, I can't remember what Jacob, I think it's Russian, like tree or something like that. But I think it'll be pretty close after your after this weekend that you're doing. I think it'd probably be a month and a half, maybe a little bit less after that.
A guy in Texas that has a 10-acre farm.
Just north of Houston?
Yeah, yeah, evidently.
Huh. Well, and there are, to be fair, there are some fairgrounds nearby too, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
There are fairgrounds nearby too, if it's a ginormous event that couldn't be contained within 10 acres.
Yes. I do know some property owners around here with more property than I do.
Oh man, that would be incredible. And especially if we got to the size. See, that was such the bummer of it. I really felt like we were going to take a huge step in size this year. And I was actually super impressed with how many people came out even still. I think we probably still had more people than we did at the first one. So it was still growth, despite everything. But had it not been for that, man, it would have been a really, really big step up. Hopefully that'll happen this year.
Cool, cool.
But that's awesome. That's awesome that you're going to come down and do the LTC thing down there. So Pat, are you going to be teaching lockpicking at this?
Yes, always.
Okay, cool.
Every event that I go to, yes.
give us a quick rundown of what that looks like.
This one, sure. This one's going to be a little different. This is one of my biggest goals over a year ago was, hey, you know what? One of these years coming up ASAP, I want to have a schedule lined up for the whole year and to start filling classes January 1st. So to have people start signing up for like the January class and then the March class. And then, so I'm doing that this year. So excited. And if I could do a shameless plug, I'd love to. Head over to my website, click on the tab that says training courses. You'll find all of my courses on there. Specifically, I'm teaching with Energetic Entry this year. I have three courses listed with them at three different times of the year. The facility is fantastic. My assistant instructor, who I bring with me, is much more devious than I am. He's got one of those kind of beautiful minds where when you want to murder somebody, he tells you those things that you didn't think of. So I'm usually pretty vanilla as far as the ethics goes, but he's kind of weird, so I love it. So we're teaching an Energetic Entry three times. Super cool facility out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody bothers us. I'm teaching with Texas Joe in April 9th, 10th, and 11th. So my block with him is going to be short, and it's going to be about three parts. Number one, here's your crash course. Here's how you pick through like a standard door lock and a standard padlock. That's part one. Super easy. And you'll be having your first lock. If you've never held lock picks and picked a lock, you'll have your first lock open within 60 seconds. I love it. I love doing this.
Hell yeah.
So that's one part. Part two is going to be bypasses for things like door latches and deadbolts and a couple padlock bypasses. And then part three, specifically because we're dealing with most people that are involved in some way or that will be involved in homesteading, I'm going to talk about some unique kind of security situations that homesteaders face. One of them being, I did a whole chapter in my book on it, vehicle gates. So if you have a big gate and you live semi-rural, there's a lot of things around that that we can talk about, some pros and some cons. For instance, here's a free piece of value. Anytime in your life, if you walk up to a mechanical lock and it's got three rotating dials and each dial goes from 0 to 9. Mm-hmm. So you can do 000 if you set that as a code and that enter. You know, that allows you access, or you can do 999 and that allows you access. So that's what we call in my community. I call that a traffic control device. That does not stop anybody from making entry. All it does is slow them down until they can count 001, 002, 003, yeah. Right? So that's a traffic control device. Do you have I think we talked about it on Fatcast before. We might've roughly, if the code is 999 and you start at 000, if you in earnest try every code, it should take you no longer than 15 minutes to hack open a 3-digit code like that. Mm-hmm. So there's 1,000 entries. You could do that in about 15 minutes.
Yep.
If it's a 4-digit code, you would really take 15 and multiply it by 10. So that's, I don't know, ballpark 3.5 hours ish.
Yep.
So just knowing that, if you are locked in or out of a vehicle gate and there is a mechanical 4-digit lock hanging there, and it's one of those locks that goes from 0000 to 9999, not the type of locks that are like, press these two buttons and then those two buttons. No, but a simple counting lock like that. That's maybe 3 hours. So if you're stuck in or out of a gate and you need to access it and nobody's dying, you now know, well, if it takes me 2 hours to walk into town from here and 2 hours to walk back, I'm better off just going 0000, yeah. 0001. So just knowing that value, hopefully there's people listening to me right now that hopefully in your life, if you find yourself in that situation, it's possible you may have said, quote, oh no, it could be a million combinations. I'll never guess. I'm just going to give up and die. Well, now, you know, if it's a 3-digit combo, 15 minutes, the 4-digit combo, maybe 3 hours. And the other good news is because of years, because of historical years, usually being 19 something or now 2000 something, most people, if they choose a code that's based on a date, it's usually 19 something something or 20 something something, which means if you count, you're starting near the bottom and counting up, or meaning that you're not going to take
something something,
right? Or 1776, right. Something like that.
So you're probably looking at maybe an hour.
So the great news is, with social engineering and the pattern of how people choose codes, it's probably a low digit code. That on top of it could only take a maximum of 3 hours. I would say more than average, it's taking less than an hour to hack a 4-digit code. What they call that, a brute force attack. not brute force as in hit it with a hammer, but brute force as in number force. So counting every possible code.
Like you would hack a Bitcoin wallet or something like that.
Sure. That might take a long time, but yes.
Yeah. But same concept. You're just
sure. Correct. So to recap, I'll teach you how to pick basic padlocks and basic door locks. I'll teach you how to bypass, which is an option faster than picking locks. And then I'm going to talk specifically about how to choose. Do I use a key? Do I use a chain? Do I use a 4-digit code? Do I use an electronic code? You know, how do we layer security? How do we shield some of that security? What are, you know, security is like onions and like ogres, you know?
They have layers.
Like parfait.
Like parfait.
So that's what I'll be teaching. And of course, like most of my events, I will make myself available before and after my block for anybody that wants more hands-on training.
And just so anybody is, if anybody's interested, that is chapter 10 in the Tactical Lockpicking book.
Hey.
Hey, yo.
Thanks, brother.
I was cool. The first copy sold.
That's, yeah, I verified that. That is correct. Thank you so much for that.
Yay.
is there anything else that we'd like to highlight of this? I'm pretty excited. I'm sure you are, Texas Joe and Pat. I'm sure you are as well. Is there anything else that you guys want to highlight? It just sounds like it's going to be a fun ass weekend. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to meet a lot of cool people. You're going to car camp, which is always great. Drink some beers around a fire. So, I mean, that in itself is good enough, but is there anything else that we need to highlight that we need to cover before getting on to, maybe we can do a little bit of segment on what happened today.
Yeah, you want to let's go off script for a little bit and get kind of weird. I was hoping we could.
So, okay, great. So we're recording today on January 6th, and it appears that a bunch of people stormed the Capitol building not 5 hours ago. Were you guys able to watch this live or keep up with it?
I was on the highway, so I saw one meme and I went, "Oh God."
Yeah.
I'm self-quarantined on the TX Homestead right now because I got coronavirus. I got a positive test Monday. So I'm just bopping around doing some cleanup and, you know, getting ready for the event in April. You know, we're, like I said, we're doing some redesign and stuff, and I'm just, you know, kind of moseying around the farm doing my thing, and my phone's like buzz, 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 buzz. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell is going on? So I check it and everybody's like, bro, it's starting. And I'm like, okay, the Civil War in America starts and I've got the fucking Rona. Awesome.
Awesome.
So, but yeah, I'm seeing this dude in a buffalo, a bison hat.
Yes, yeah.
The Q shaman, I guess, is what this who this dude
is.
Is
that what they're calling him? God, I mean, the meme is wild. I mean, I'm sure that there are ops within ops within ops, but I mean, not you know, the fact that this is unprecedented is. I think that remains. I mean, I don't think, at least in modern, you know, in my lifetime, nobody has stormed and literally taken the Capitol building. So that's pretty wild. I mean, the news, I was kind of watching the news. I work from home, so I had the news on in the background, and they were just doing, it legitimately seemed as if, you know, when the news acts in a certain way, you're like, oh shit, they're really like backpedaling and like they don't know what's going on. It kind of felt like that. It kind of felt like a lot of this was pretty organic. I'm sure now, being hours and probably tomorrow day, you know, a day into it and stuff like that, people will be infiltrating and who knows what the hell will happen. But it was pretty wild to watch.
It's an interesting time to be alive.
It sure is. It sure as hell is. Yeah, we'll see what comes of it, but I don't know what Trump does from here. I mean, he didn't exactly condemn anything, and he still hasn't really condemned anything. Like, and they cut his Twitter. Like, they've been deleting his tweets. You know, not that I ultimately care at all one way or the other, but it is pretty wild to watch. And I mean, he's going to be in the hot seat if he doesn't condemn this shit, and then Biden becomes president. I mean, they're going to – I would assume they'd do something to him. I mean – right?
So what, like inciting violence via just not saying anything?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. It just seems like they can't.
They blame him for everything already. Why would they not blame him for this?
Right. I know. But I mean, but they couldn't do anything before because he was the president. But what if he's not the president? I mean, he's going to be in some hot water.
I mean,
I do not suspect that President Trump will be arrested anytime soon, just like I didn't have any suspicion that Hillary would be arrested, just like I don't think Obama will be arrested in or out of office.
No, I agree yeah. with you. I don't think he'll be arrested. I'm just curious what's going to happen, because he's not going to be allowed back in, I'll say, allowed in polite society. You know what I mean? Like Hillary and Obama and all of those people are allowed in polite society. They can come on the news. They can talk.
It's the same as everything else. All their opposition wants is them to not be in control. And as soon as they get off that pedestal, they'll leave them alone. They will be irrelevant at that point.
Do you think that Trump will allow them to leave him alone? In other words, do you think that he will continue to harass from whatever pedestal he has? Because at the end of the day, he has a lot of followers and a lot of really intense followers.
I do. I think he'll still be politically active. I think he'll still stir the pot. You know, I think people will still love to hate him because he's the guy that people have just devoted their entire lives and existence to hating. And when Orange Man disappears, what are they going to do with themselves? So, you know,
I just wonder if he's going to disappear. Is kind of my, I mean, I, you know, it's always been rumored that he's
I don't think he can at this point.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think he's got to lean in. That's probably his only option.
Right. But I mean,
if he does, it could get way weirder super fast.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. He's already got an entire news network.
Right. And his success is diversified. Right. He's an independently wealthy millionaire, billionaire, whatever the hell. Like, he owns some of the most expensive real estate, you know, aside from what, McDonald's. Trump owns some of the most expensive real estate in the world. So, I mean, it's not like he's going to get arrested, thrown in jail, and go broke.
No. I agree with you. And that's why I think it has the potential to get way weirder than in the instance of Bush or Obama or Clinton, is that I think he has the capability of hanging out and being a thorn in everyone's side, even as not the president, and inciting.
Oh, he has a lot of rules to abide by right now as president. Wait till he's not.
That's exactly my point.
I disagree. Exactly. I think right now he doesn't have to play by rules.
He may have more power outside of the presidency in some weird kind of.
Oh, I don't know about power. Way. I think he might have more liberties as a private individual, you know, a private citizen than. So.
It's gonna be weird as hell to watch play out, but it's a crazy. Not that I, you know, care about it one way or the other, but watching Twitter delete his tweets, it's just like a weird thing. I mean, it's not that weird, I guess, but I don't know. He's a president of the, you know, I don't believe in any of it, but Twitter does, right? You know, I mean, theoretically, you know, they're deleting the tweets of the people, the guy that they believe is president. And, you know, I don't know. It's just weird.
I just think it's insane to be able to watch communist actions and censorship like that in real time. You know, like, we all talk about it, you know, hey, this exists. Everybody's like, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, blah, right. You know, but you can actually sit there and watch it happen in real time.
Yeah.
Am I still a conspiracy theorist?
It's wild.
I have some thoughts.
Okay.
Rule number one in detecting propaganda, whether you feel positive about it or negative about it, as soon as you see a news piece and you get highly emotional, whether it's good emotion or bad emotion, that's usually a sign that, whoa, 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 you should pump the brakes. Mm-hmm. So let's take that and let's layer on top the fact that mainstream media is giving us a little bit of coverage and social media is not as free as we, you know, have experienced it in the past. Mm-hmm. Tons and tons and tons of spin and, you know, erasing history and promoting one post over the other and blocking people, deleting people, all of that. So we layer that on top. So even the info we're getting from social media is limited at best.
For sure.
So I'll take that. And I'll say that I've already seen some signs of this not being as organic as some people in the Liberty movement would like to hope.
Oh, me too. Over the course of the day, me too, for sure.
So my conclusion is three parts. Number one, either this is completely planned and or authorized by what you would, I don't know, hashtag the elites, right? Mm-hmm. Or two, knowing that it's happening, they allow / encourage it. Maybe they didn't plan it. Maybe they're on charge. But if it happened, they might go, yeah, well, sure, let's let that run. Mm-hmm. And three, which to hedge my bets, either one of those, whether it's real or not, and whether they're just profiting from it or planned it, three would be the elite will benefit from this in the end regardless. That's my
absolutely. That's my thought.
Yeah. I'm leaning towards two. I think it could be a dog off the leash type deal, where some of this was planned and whatever, and that, but even still, that I think if I were to put myself in their shoes, that is such a reckless op to run. I mean, having 320 million people see the Capitol sieged that easily, that seems really, really reckless. If I were them, if I were protecting my hegemony, to give people that idea that, oh my God, you can basically run into Capitol buildings and siege them. That's,
well, I mean, you can walk into them taking a guided tour.
What's that?
You can walk into the Capitol on a guided tour.
Yeah, well, this was no guided tour.
No, I know.
In some ways it is.
This was a self-guided tour.
Yeah, I know.
Ripping hard drives out of computers.
Yeah, I know. But I think that those people were probably there and in place. I mean, there were memes and shit circulating 2-3 weeks ago about, hey, we're going to have, you know, mass protests at every major city. And, you know, people telling me, hey, man, don't let, you know, Texas Mama drive into Houston on Wednesday the 6th because, you know, all out civil war is going to break out. So there was people organizing this shit from the get.
Yeah. No, I don't doubt that.
I'm willing to be wrong.
I don't doubt any of that. But my ultimate point is Joe Sixpack sitting there on the couch, who is kind of pissed off at the entire establishment, who doesn't think on those levels, is seeing a tremendous amount of weakness by the people that he hates. That seems reckless to me if I'm trying to protect my power.
Right, but what does Pat say all the time? Security is an illusion.
It is. Well, and listen, let me make my position clear. I'm not excited about this being a false flag. And I'm willing to be wrong about it being a false flag, but that's what my gut tells me. And if we've learned anything from history, even the founders, even though they weren't fucking saints, they said, be fucking suspicious of your government. That's what you should start from. And then move forward with your investigation. It shouldn't be, oh, it's exactly what they say, and then later we'll figure it out. I think you should start from that position of being skeptical.
Well, no. I get what you're saying. I think my point is beyond that. Is that it doesn't, it almost doesn't matter if it's a false flag or not. Perception is reality, right? Like the Reichstag fire was a false flag, and it ended up with Adolf Hitler having to kill himself, you know? So it's like these things have secondary effects that you cannot predict.
And yeah. And that's a good,
like,
point.
A weird thing to project.
And I don't disagree, but I think in a week when the next big shoe falls, I think we'll learn a lot more about this event.
I think I get what you're saying, Carr, is just kinetic movement is kinetic movement, yeah, at this point.
You're introducing so many variables into this.
Are creating a situation that somebody can justify reacting to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're casting that into 320 million individuals' homes. That's a lot of variables. False flag or not, it almost is functionally irrelevant. I don't care.
I still disagree with you guys. I'll be the lone man standing on the hill. Let me ask you this. So it's extreme, but I think if 2020 showed us anything, it's as extreme as possible, and especially likely now. What if the question was asked in smoky circles, in cigar rooms, you know, in secret, right? What if the question was asked, you know, we did this lockdown thing and it wasn't as effective as we'd hoped. We better really crack that fucking whip and put goddamn troops on the street. How do we make it happen? And someone in the back raises their hand and they go, oh, we'll just siege the Capitol.
Yeah.
One little building. No one gets hurt. No shots fired. A bunch of weirdos do it. And then guess what? A week later with a new president and a new vice president, they walk in and they crack the fucking whip. Boom, troops on the streets. We'll never have this problem again.
I disagree with that last part. I think I actually agree with your entire premise. I wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't think that we're in disagreement here.
But we're not in disagreement with that. I don't think we're in disagreement at all. My point is that regardless of whether this was organic or if this was planned,
It doesn't
matter, because perception is reality, and most people aren't thinking on those levels. And most people just saw the Capitol sieged, and they just saw a tremendous amount of weakness from the people that they may or may not hate.
It's a continuation of action reaction.
Yeah, it's action reaction, and so that's a lot of variables, man, and that's a lot of variables that you can that are oftentimes very difficult to control. You know?
Okay.
You know, I mean, in the end, you know, you can say there were a million false flags in the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union broke up. There were a million false flags, you know, and troops on the street and ultimate authoritarianism in Nazi Germany fucking broke up. Just because they're marching today doesn't mean they can be marching tomorrow. As evidenced by every single authoritarian regime in history that hasn't broken up as of today.
Fair point.
You know, I mean,
I don't think we're arguing against each other.
No, we
I think we
not.
we have parallel, semi agreeable arguments.
Orthogonal. My.
Hey, how dare you? I don't know what that means.
No, they're not in direct opposition at all. I'm in fact, I'm sure that their goal is to have more troops on the street. I mean, anybody who is of our political persuasion is dead sure of that. My point is that they introduced a shitload of variables into the situation that I don't think they probably needed to introduce. Because if the last year has taught us anything, the entire populace seems to be pretty tame. Why not just march them into the street right now?
I disagree with that. Okay. Happy to include a source. I remember just a year ago, we had, how many was it? 10,000, 3,000, 30,000? How many people was it? Armed citizens in the street in where, North Carolina?
In Virginia.
Virginia. I'm also willing to be wrong about that one too, but my suspicion is.
And then what happened?
And then we got Corona and we got lockdowns and we got masks and we got mandates.
Yep.
So I still am open to the very likely possibility that Corona is, oh, great, you're standing up against us. Boom, lockdown for 9 months. I have no doubt that that is not only possible, but likely. That's where the fabric of the back of my brain is just holding that little net going. There's a good chance this is because of that.
I think that's a much easier op. That introduces a lot less variables. This one is a bizarre op. This introduces a lot of variables. You know what I mean?
I do, and I agree with that.
That's my only point. I'm not saying I know or I'm not claiming to know. I'm just if I'm trying to build a building, I'm not going to throw a million pieces of wood up in the air and hope they land in the right place. You know what I mean?
I know how some of those things work. Let's take a look at
very limited. This happened 5 hours ago. So we're all just, you know, but
think about this though. If you go based on resources, right, we get one building, maybe two buildings, whatever, that are quote unquote breached, right? It wasn't a fucking mass murder. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't exactly call it a military operation, but you had some people in buildings that they weren't supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. What's the risk to government? That looks really bad, right? Great. Yeah. What's the benefit for government? Well, if we don't do more data breaching of our citizens, if we don't treat our citizens like they're domestic terrorists, you know, if we don't put troops on the street, then, you know, are the fabric of our country is at risk. So now we can reasonably step our game up even higher.
Why? I
understand.
Agree.
Let me bring a full circle. You said there's a lot of variables to handle. Yes. So people see that, oh, we can stand up now. But the entire weight of the federal government and military and local and state governments are more than happy to smash down any attempt at that again. And it'll be harder. And think about this too. The rules of engagement change when you have domestic terrorism.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. No.
So what once was not allowed to be done, now, because of this, we can do. I think it's the government's view.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I definitely see that. You're right.
And it's so much easier for them to violently dominate every single individual one of us than it is for us to go, all right, well, let's get me and 100 people together and we'll go storm our local city courthouse. That's really unlikely. And like I said, if we did, then I have no doubt that the government changes the rules and plays harder.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And
that is a good point. I guess
I'm willing to be wrong.
Well, for sure. We're spitballing 5 hours after the event.
Like what she said.
Yeah.
I'm willing to just sit back and drink some beer and let this play out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Me too. I mean, ultimately, that's all I care to.
Yeah, I don't want to play in this game. I'm gonna be to be clear,
my property regardless. But
I had people texting me today, and they're like, "Hey, you ready for Civil War? You prepping for, you know, Civil War?" And I'm like, "No. What's wrong with you? Like, I don't enjoy seeing this stuff happening in my country. This is
it's clown town so shit. Bad.
Yeah. Yeah, suck doesn't even begin to cover it.
Yeah.
I guess what it comes down to, and I see your point, Pat, is that this gives the government excuse to clamp down on quote-unquote domestic terrorism, whatever in much the same way that 9/11 gave them an excuse for the global war on terror, this could be an excuse for
an excuse for the domestic war on terror, right. Yes.
At the same time, that has the oppositional force of what I was talking about was we now see that this is a viable, or maybe viable is the wrong word, but a possible solution.
It's doable.
It's doable.
And I agree with you too.
Yeah. And who wins? Who knows? Well, yeah, in the short term, I would say, you know, government, but in the long term, I mean, I think the wheels fall off eventually, just because it's a socialist institution that can't allocate resources. Yeah. But,
I'm also not saying that we would lose.
No. Yeah. No. I know.
So I'm not saying I'm not saying it's a losing battle. This is probably precisely the time that it could be a winning battle. I agree. 100% in accordance with your point of the argument.
Right. Man. Either way, it's heavy. Wild. Either way, whatever it is, it's heavy stuff. Like that's probably the heaviest stuff I've really seen, I think, since 9/11. I symbolically anyway. I mean, would you agree with that?
I would not. I think that these masks, if it happened in a different order.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
If it happened in a different order and it was, a Capitol building got breached, I'd go, wow, that's terrible. And then it was, now we have 9 months of millions of people's businesses being shut down. True. The government gets to pick whatever law they want out of thin air and enforce it violently against its people. You can't meet with your friends. You can't go to church. Businesses can't do business.
Right.
You have to wear this fucking patch of fabric on your body as a new piece of your outfit, or else we'll murder you. Yeah. I honestly think that's worse.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely worse. No doubt about it. At least now, before the state retaliates for whatever this is, it's without a doubt worse. There is something symbolically, you know, you see the towers and there's something very symbolic about that. And then, seeing people crawling all over the Capitol building and bashing in windows and climbing in, you know, there's something about the symbolism of that is pretty, pretty powerful too. So, but I don't know, y'all. It's a weird ass fucking time. I can say that.
Now would be a good time to learn how to grow some food.
Yeah, that's bringing it all back.
Now would be a good time to take some of your resource scarcity into your own hand and financial security. I mean, it's
yep,
dude.
Yeah, man, no doubt. Well, so they'll let that be the sales pitch. Guys, April 9th, 10th, 11th, right?
Nailed it.
Go to, I saw it's on your site, uncensoredtactical.com. And then where else can they find this?
Email texasjoe@chicken.guy @thewifiproject.org.
Email him, go sign up, go learn how to do some things, empower yourself. I'm always going to suggest to have a little Bitcoin around, just to get your wealth outside of the state. Any last plugs before we wrap here today?
No, I'm good. I mean, I'm on Subscribe Star at IKC Pod. I'm on Instagram at IKC Podcast.
Pat,
I'm good. I'm happy. Copacetic.
No, you gotta plug something. You're
Uncensored Tactical.
All right.
If you can't find Uncensored Tactical, you don't deserve to get in contact with Pat.
I'm easy to find, uncensoredtactical.com. If you want to train with me, that is the coolest, best way to get a huge return on your investment. I'm teaching a lot this year. I would really like to fill my seats. That's
cool. Cool. All right, guys. Well, I'm probably going to run a little closing bumper after this, but thank you guys so much for joining me, and hopefully I'll see you guys in a few months.
Thanks, Carr.
Thanks, man.